Hello there, and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. My next guest is a new arrival to Noosa, Queensland. He ran his own gallery in Footscray in Melbourne, and then added curator to his resume before jumping at the opportunity to become the director at the Noosa Regional Gallery. Michael Brennan grew up in the outer Melbourne suburb of Sunbury, in a house that he says his parents won in a local newspaper competition. And his fondest memories are of his father writing poetry and printing his own books at home. In this podcast, we talk about freedom of speech, burning the Australian flag, and being questioned by the police for a piece that was displayed in his gallery that some found offensive. We started by talking about a typical day as director for the Noosa Regional Gallery.
Coffee. Always a priority. Well, actually, you know, the day probably starts before that. I've got two young kids, so it's about getting them ready and off to school in the morning. And then I think about my coffee after that. But once I roll into the office, it's kind of touching base with the rest of the team there, finding out what programs and activities we've got on for the day, usually in relation to a specific exhibition that we've got on. And I'm always working on, it feels like, about 20 different things at once, so sometimes it's whichever one's shouting the loudest, I guess.
Michael, you're a relative newcomer to Noosa. You moved up from Melbourne.
Mm.
What was the lure?
It was one of those perfect storms in some sort of way. I was in a contract position myself that was coming to an end down in Melbourne. My partner, Kirsten, she'd been working for her family business for many, many years, and that had just wound up, and they decided to sell it after nearly 60 years in the industry. It was the start of a school year, so the kids would have a nice, smooth transition. My father passed away last year as well, so I didn't have a lot of family connection to Melbourne anymore. My mum passed away about 15 years ago, so just like all the conditions were right, and we'd always spoken about eventually moving to a, you know, idyllic coastal region of Australia. It's just we didn't think it would happen when we were in our 40s, I guess.
Tell me about where you grew up in Melbourne and what life was like for you as a kid.
I grew up on the outer western outskirts of Melbourne, I suppose, a place called Sunbury, famous for the Sunbury Rock Festival before I was born.
late 60s, I think it was. Yeah. Billy Thorpe headlined that.
That would be right. I was born in 76, so that's when I moved to Sunbury. My parents actually won their house in a kind of working class fairy tale, I guess.
You know, is that right? Like a lottery or raffle thing?
Yeah, it was through the, it wasn't called the Herald Sun then. I think it was just the Sun newspaper back then. And you had to cut out 5 mastheads from the paper, put them in an envelope and send them in.
Do you remember what that was like? Because I can remember as a kid seeing competitions like that in the newspaper where there's a new house on offer.
Yeah.
But to actually, you know, I can't say that I ever knew anybody that actually won one.
I mean, I wasn't familiar with the story until much later in my existence. I think it was probably in my teenage years when I heard the story from my parents. But it was my mum's idea to enter it, but she wanted to put it in Dad's name because he was apparently the lucky one. So, yeah, they won a, I can't remember whether it was the house or the land or both that they won.
But, and this was out at Sunbury?
Yeah, essentially, you know, even while I was in primary school, was surrounded by paddocks, so there's not a lot going on out there, but it was amazing. You know, you just ride your bike up and down the street. You know, we'd occasionally even get a kangaroo in our backyard or a koala up the tree, so it was a pretty amazing place to kind of grow up.
Did you have a passion for art back then?
Even though I was surrounded by this kind of vast space outdoors, I probably spent most of my time indoors scribbling away on something, you know, coloring books, drawing, that sort of stuff. Dad was a pretty creative person as well. Never kind of, it's not fair to say he never professionally realized it, but he was, a very committed family man who worked 9 to 5, or not really 9 to 5, shift work and overtime to support his family. Come from a really traditional space there, but spent a lot of his time after work and on weekends tinkering, making stuff, doing a lot of painting and drawing and writing poetry and self-publishing books.
Wow.
And doing all these different things.
That's great, but I guess his generation was the work first, the creative thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, that outlook really defined his personality as much as any kind of creative endeavours. But having that in the house growing up, you know, it was just natural for me to be wanting to do the same thing as him. And I remember kind of writing a kid's storybook together and illustrating it together called the Stripey Spiky Monster. We actually discovered the original of it just last year, actually, cleaning out the house. But, he was always making paintings and sticking them on the wall. And eventually his poetry really took up most of his attention, I guess. And we're not talking kind of classical romantic poetry here or anything like that. It was all, he described it as comic Aussie verse, because if he went down the pub to try and flog his books, he'd get punched in the face. So it was
something,
you know,
he could talk to his mates
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah. It made it more relatable. So, you know, and he was absolutely tenacious in his pursuit of trying to make a success of it. He would, as I said, he self-published books in our lounge room, and self-publishing back then didn't mean, you know, laying it out on InDesign and sending it to China.
Yeah, right.
It saw him purchase a couple of photocopiers and set them up in our lounge room.
What a great memory, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great story.
An electric typewriter with heaps of lift-off tape, I think it was, to correct the mistakes rather than hitting the delete key. And a couple of pretty serious staplers. And so he, you know, crash course in binding, and he'd run off 1,000 copies of these things. And as I said, he'd kind of go out to markets and do readings, couple of beers in his belly for some confidence. And it eventually turned out that he had a couple of regular spots on different radio stations around Melbourne. I think there was a show called John Reed's Poets Corner, from memory, that he used to get up every Sunday morning, and they'd call him up and he'd recite something. And my memory is really fuzzy, but there was another station where he had a regular 5-minute spot at the end of the week, each week, where he'd kind of wrap up the current affairs in comic Aussie verse.
But what great fuel for you, Michael, as a kid?
Yeah, look, it was just a normal part of the background of what happened in our house, I suppose. There was always a bit of craziness and wackiness, and always a kind of sense that you could just do things, I guess. There was a real DIY attitude to it. As I got older and, you know, went off to art school myself and kind of recognised that you needed to have an awareness of the industry and engage with the industry in a kind of professional way as well, and have a foot in both camps, I suppose, to make a real success of things. But I think just the freedom in creative expression that was just present there in our house was a pretty special thing to be exposed to.
So born quite early for you in terms of that desire to do art and artistic work.
Yeah, I think
work.
So. It just seemed normal.
What did your mum do at the time?
In that kind of real traditional outlook that my dad had, he really wanted her to be the stay-at-home mum and look after the family. So before I was born, she was a hairdresser. Didn't work again, and I shouldn't say just, because it's a big job to look after her kids, as I know myself. But, you know, she looked after the house and looked after us kids. So really fond memories of her as well. You know, she was always there to keep dad in line, I guess. I went to art school in Warrnambool, which is about 300-odd Ks outside of Melbourne. And
why there?
It was the only university where I could do both fine art and graphic design in the one course that I was aware of at the time. And I had these ideas that I'd get into advertising and make my money and drive
make
a Porsche
coin.
And all that sort of stuff, and then do some painting on the weekend. So I was bored out of my mind after 6 months of one of the most boring graphic design lecturers that I've ever encountered in my life, and dropped all the sensible stuff and just majored in painting. I guess I lived in Warrnambool for the 3 years that I went to art school, and then moved back to Melbourne and tried to make art. My wife and I, before she was my wife, set up a studio complex in Footscray in an artist-run space called Trocadero Art Space, and it was kind of an effort to connect with
your own space.
Yeah,
yeah, right. Just
an effort to connect with artists in Melbourne. You know, if I'd been living out of the scene, and while, you know, living in a beautiful area like Warrnambool is great for lifestyle, you come back to Melbourne and you suddenly realise you're not connected to anyone who's doing stuff in the field that you want to be a player in. So opening up an artist-run gallery and getting, I think we had 14 studios there to start with, kind of built that community around us, and is really how I strayed into the area of making exhibitions as well, because these things are hungry beasts. You can put on an exhibition, and then suddenly you need to put on another one and another one and another one. So I started finding myself gathering together artists whose work I liked and making shows. There was heaps of challenges, and yeah, I guess I kind of look back on the challenges as some of the most fond parts of the experience. We're talking 15 years ago now, and the space still runs today. We eventually set it up as a not-for-profit organisation, and a volunteer committee runs the space now. But everything from not realising that we needed a certificate of electrical safety to have power on in the building, through to the police coming and removing one of the exhibits and asking me to come down for an interview I think it was offensive public behaviour. So we had two indoor gallery spaces, and we had a billboard on the side of the building as well. And the idea of the billboard was to have a temporary public art space. And so we'd work with artists to put interesting things up there, and, you know, reasonably young and probably open to a few risks, I guess. And one of the artists that I was working with, Aslan McLennan, kind of he identified as much as an artist as a political activist. This is around the time that John Howard was bringing in quite strong sedition laws. And there was, you know, a lot of conversation around people arriving to the country on boats and that we should be turning them away and all this highly charged political discourse. And so Aslan, as a kind of statement against that in his art practice, decided to partially burn an Australian flag, and we'd pin that to the billboard. And it kind of it coincided with Australia Day roughly that year that we had it up there. And it just kind of went under the radar for a little while until one morning, I think it might have been the day before Australia Day, back in the day when you had answering machines attached to your phone, I heard it going off quite early in the morning, and it was 3AW in Melbourne ringing for comment and repeatedly ringing for comment every 5 or so minutes. What had happened was the police had come down to the gallery while no one was there on a closed day, had gained access to our billboard space through an adjacent business and ripped the flag off the billboard and left their business card so we could call them back. It was stressful.
I'm not a lawyer, but is that a criminal offence to burn the Australian flag?
No, it's not. And interestingly, John Howard came out and said as much during this little saga, because perhaps fortuitously for us, up here in Queensland around the same time, there was a protest by some Indigenous activists, and they also burnt an Australian flag. So he was commenting more directly around that, but I think it was Amanda Vanstone who had more to say about our little art installation.
But between those two incidences, the one where you said the police came down for there was some offensive work and the burning of the flag, what's your position, your thoughts in terms of freedom of speech? And
I mean, I think the freedom in artistic expression is probably one of the most important things about being an artist and being in a society and a community that values artists. It's not hard to look back, particularly with the internet now, and find that so many things that we found offensive and confronting throughout history are pretty passé these days. And often it's artists who lead the way in driving social and community discourse around important issues. So I think it's really important that a space exists where artists are free to test boundaries, and you know, then artists are not above the law, of course, but it's important to hold a mirror up to society sometimes and just make sure that what we take for granted as being the correct way of doing things still holds true. And I think the most powerful, important artworks ask questions rather than give answers. So, you know, I think to open up a space where there can be a dialogue around an issue is a really powerful thing for art to be able to achieve.
You mentioned that the gallery still exists today. Did we talk about where in Melbourne it was located?
Yeah, it's in Footscray. It's in, Footscray's changed as well. Yes, yeah, certainly was.
And in what way?
Well,
do you think it's more gentrified?
Absolutely, and I think, you know,
because I know they used to talk about St Kilda like that.
But, sure,
but
you know,
Footscray, I thought, is still really heart and soul.
Yeah, look, I still love it, and I've just noticed it's changed quite a bit, as you'd expect it to, over a 15-year period. I think, you know, when we decided to set up a gallery there, it was because we knew there were a lot of artists in the area, but we also knew it was kind of one of the last suburbs in that 5 kilometre out of the city ring to fall to outright gentrification. So my audience or the visitors to the gallery was as much, you know, heroin addicts as artists when we first set up. They used to shoot up in the stairwell of our gallery. We used to have people come in trying to steal things to take down to cash converters. When we first took over the building, the police used to use it looking out the window to stake out the corner where all the deals went down. So it was right in the thick of things then. And that's not to say there's not an element of that still in Footscray.
It was also a real gritty existence for people that have kind of lived in suburbs like that. You know, that's very relatable
to absolutely talk
about stuff like that.
Slowly the kind of the working class pubs have been replaced by bars and you know, barber shops where you can also order a beer at the same time. You know, the hipsters have moved in.
You said at the start of the conversation, Michael, you were looking for a change. You were looking to move not necessarily to Noosa, but somewhere for the kids and all that. Tell me about that process in terms of going from running your own gallery and being artistic and creative and kind of having that freedom to an extension or working for a department of local government, local council.
I mean, there was a few steps in between, I guess, which made the transition seem normal. And, you know, from Trocadero Art Space, we, and I say we because my partner Kirsten's been involved in both of these projects, we set up another space in Richmond, in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, an attempt to kind of infiltrate the commercial gallery district over there. So we ran that for about 3 years with a couple of friends as well. And then, you know, we found out that we were going to be parents, and I thought I'd better do something that brought some money into some family as well. A little bit of responsibility. Yeah, right. And up until this point, even though we'd set up some galleries and run studios, I still primarily identified as an artist in my own head anyway. So, you know, I'd kept a studio all this time and made work and exhibited. But I got a job in a community arts centre back in Footscray as the programming manager. And it's probably a minor miracle that I was given the job, in that I'd it represented my first full-time job. Not that I mentioned that in my application, of course, but, you know.
I know, but I can see from that perspective, kind of strengthened your credentials in terms of then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. And look, I think through that application process with Footscray Community Arts Centre, I think I was lucky that the director had a performing arts background, so wasn't totally aware of the status of different art galleries in Melbourne. So when I listed Trocadero Art Space and shifted as two spaces that I was the founder and director of, it probably felt like it carried more weight than the couple of empty buildings that we painted white and threw friends' artworks up on the wall really represented. After a few years at Footscray Community Arts Centre, I got a job as a curator at a university art museum. So I worked at La Trobe University Museum of Art for about 4 years, and through a process of attrition, I suppose, you know, people left, and I went from curator to senior curator to artistic director, and then moved from there into another local government gallery in Brighton in Melbourne, Bayside Art Gallery, which I was on a contract for, and knew that I'd have to find something when I saw the Noosa Regional Gallery position come up. So that's the trajectory from, yeah, you know, DIY space to working in a pretty structured government organisation.
Do you still get to paint? How often would you paint?
I brought my easel up with me, which is good. There's holding on to that optimistically. The last time I made a painting from beginning to end myself was, I must have made a couple in the last 12 months, but, you know, it's not necessarily the focus of what I'm doing at the moment. Although I've been playing a little bit more with the kids in this space, even as recently as the last few weeks, and getting a couple of canvases out and working collaboratively on a picture. So sometimes we do some drawing and painting on the same surface at the same time. Sometimes they do a little bit of a representation of what's in their head, and then I add to it afterwards. And it's I'm finding it quite rewarding, actually.
What's the trick for engaging kids? You paint, I play a bit of guitar from time to time. For creatives that have kids, do you have a tactic or a plan?
They're generally not interested in the same sort of stuff that I'm interested in, so it requires me to kind of lay down a little bit and go with the flow in their direction.
This is why I ask, because I think parents, you know, parents have their own kind of internal passion, and they'd like to kind of share it with their kids, but the more you push, the further it seems that they will push away from what you're trying to teach them.
I think so. I mean, maybe that's, you know, the same in any kind of industry or aspect of life. You know, if you want your kids to be an accountant because you're interested in it, they probably won't be.
Well, that's boring, Michael.
I know. But I guess what I was going to say was, if you're a creative person to begin with, then most of them that I know are open to chance and risk and experimentation and all that kind of stuff anyway. So you've got a good starting point to just go with the flow with what, yeah, your kids want to do.
But what about, you know, what you saw your dad doing?
I mean, it's a little bit difficult for me to recall in some respects. The book that we made together, I can imagine that I probably would have asked to do it because I saw him doing it. I can't. But, you know, I'm not really sure, to be honest. Yeah. But you just know that these kind of things rub off in the long run. And if you see this kind of activity around the house and it's just normal, then, yeah, it's just normal for your kids to try too. You know, I always love it when we've got artists over for dinner or staying with us for a little while, because, you know, they're going to make great stories for the kids when they get older, that this person stayed with us or this person came over for dinner and they'd been interviewed by the police for seditious behaviour.
I know when you've got a couple of kids, it's hard to find downtime or get involved in a hobby, but what do you do during the... Do you have any downtime, hobbies, pastime?
It's not a lot, but I did buy a surfboard when I first moved up here.
To learn to surf?
I'm learning.
I've never surfed, and I always look very envious out at people that are out in the...
Yeah, right. I thought... my wife, she came up here 2 weeks before me with the kids, I think, and I was saying while I was back in Melbourne, I'm getting a surfboard in the first week or else I'm never going to do it. So I did that, and I went and did a lesson and managed to stand up.
What, just one lesson?
Just one lesson. Although, who needs more than one lesson?
And where do you go?
I've just been down the main beach so far.
First point there?
Yeah, and taking kids out as well, because I've got a big 9-foot foamy to play with, and both of the boys have stood up the first time, which
great.
I was pretty impressed with. So I have no doubt that they'll be great surfers, and I'll, you know, 10 years later, I'll still be muddling about and, you know, falling in the foam.
How long do you reckon you'll call Noosa home?
No plans. Yeah. No plans. I've got no intention to stay here and no intention to leave. So we're just going to see where it takes us. Although, you know, we've fallen in love with this place enough to, you know, be looking at buying a house here. So I suppose that's a good commitment. Indication yeah. of where our hearts and minds are at the moment.
Michael, thank you so much for coming in and sharing some of your stories with us.
Thank you, John.
Michael Brennan, the director of the Noosa Regional Gallery. I hope you enjoyed that chat. If you did, feel free to share the podcast with family and friends on your social media channels. If you listen to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Wooshka or Stitcher, please rate and review our Conversations in Noosa podcast. And remember, there are two fresh podcasts every Monday and Thursday on our In Noosa Magazine website, innoosamagazine.com.au/conversations. Until next time, take care.